Morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, June 22nd, 2005. We're convening the House Special Committee on Budget Subcommittee on Human Services and Public Safety. And today we will be discussing House Bill 5148, which is the DHS budget bill, and we'll be focusing today on health services. We'll also be discussing House Bill 5149, which will deal with some DHS fees. So with that, we'll open a work session on House Bill 5148. And Mr. Britton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yesterday I distributed to your offices copies of a brief memo that I wrote for this particular budget piece, as well as a spreadsheet showing the changes to the governor's recommended budget, and finally a list of the performance measurements for the Department of Human Services. Briefly, what we're recommending is on this memo, you can see the LFO recommended column of numbers on the front page of the memo, compare it to the governor's recommended budget. If you flip over to the back page, you'll see that I am recommending that the subcommittee consider some changes to the performance measurements, so we need to allow some time to do that this morning. We are not doing final approval of this particular budget today. We are recommending a preliminary budget, and it is likely that this will be the budget that is incorporated after we finish up with seniors and people with disabilities, the budget cluster there tomorrow. So with that, what I would like to spend most of my time going through is the spreadsheet, which you have in front of you. Like the department-wide support services and the children's, adults, and families budget spreadsheets that you have seen before that Ms. Baker presented the last 2 days, this shows it begins with the governor's recommended budget on the first line. It goes through a series of agency reshoot request issues, and that continues on to the second page. And we'll go through these in a moment, but just to draw your attention, on line 37 on page 2, you can see the subtotal of the total of the reshoot adjustments. For health services, there is a savings of $25.9 million general fund, total funds reduction over on the far right of almost $66 million total funds, 148 fewer positions. FTE is almost 72 FTE less. Then you can see additionally some adjustments on the bottom of the second page, over on page 3, and finally at the top of page 4 that show adjustments that the House budget would make to the governor's reshot, if you will, the reshoot of the health services budget cluster.
Mr. Chair.
Rosie Woosnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Britton, the top line that we start with, are we to assume then you, because the sheet we have here, are we to assume that all those numbers like lottery is different? Lottery is the same, then you go to the other funds. The other fund, does that include tobacco and other?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett, it includes tobacco settlement, tobacco tax, and other funds on this spreadsheet. They're combined.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
And follow up.
And then federal would be the next three to get the total. Is that?
Let me correct my earlier statement. Other includes tobacco settlement, tobacco tax, other, and non-limited other funds.
Okay.
The federal funds include, on my spreadsheet, that which has been labeled federal funds as well as non-limited federal funds.
Right.
In both instances, the non-limited federal funds are part of the Women's, Infants, and Children's programs, WIC programs, within public health. Thank you. Continuing then, you can see on line one is the governor's recommended budget for health services. This is the budget that was released on the 1st of December 2004. For $6,761,000,000 total funds, 2,378 positions, 2,222.78 FTE. Then, as you know, the agency did a series of reshoots, or a reshoot, and these are the issues associated with the health services portion of the budget. Line 2, for example, shows you a tobacco tax revenue reduction. It reduces tobacco tax based on the forecast by the Department of Administrative Services, and it backfills that lower forecast, or that less amount of tobacco tax revenue, with general fund. Line 3 is a repricing of what is known as Package 090 reductions. These were about a 20-item list of reductions in the governor's budget. This is the repricing of those reductions, and you can see that the savings from those reductions is about $9 million less in terms of general fund, $25.1 million total funds less in terms of the savings that were assumed in the governor's budget. The main piece of that are really, there are two areas. One is in general assistance, and there was an Oregon health plan cut associated with a seniors and people with disabilities cut of general assistance. That has since been all added back within the Oregon health plan portion of the budget, and that, I believe, is about $6 or $7 million of that general fund. As well, there was an elimination of the employment initiative, and in seniors, there was some Oregon health plan reductions there that proved not to be feasible. They don't believe at this point that they will get any reductions in the Oregon health plan, either by eliminating general assistance or the employment initiative. So the bulk of the $9 million is found in adding those two back. There were other adjustments, and some of those you're going to be seeing as we go down to the add backs. For example, adult dental had, I believe, something around a $12 million savings in the governor's budget, the elimination of adult dental. Now that savings has grown, I think about $1 million or so. So that kind, those kinds of savings that were greater are also in line 3 as well, and net against those increases in general assistance and the employment initiative. So this is a net number of a lot of changes made to caseload and to pricing of reductions that were included in the governor's budget. Line 4 is a repricing of the policy option package number 110, which is the implementation.
Try not to ask too many, because I'm, again, the new member of the committee. But, Mr. Chair, I don't understand it. We're talking reductions, but we're adding money. So the prices didn't go down, the caseload didn't go down, but we're adding money?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative
Wisnik,
there were about, and I'm just looking at this, there were about $61 million, or I beg your pardon, I don't know how much was reduced in the governor's budget directly, but the reshoot was about $61 million of reductions, compared to a reduction of maybe like $70 million in the governor's budget. So the overall reductions were less by $9 million.
Okay.
And there's a list here, Representative, of all the different changes in each of those reductions. And as I said, the bulk of it was in general assistance. There were no reshoot savings associated with general assistance, primarily because of presumptive eligibility, that when a person who is applying for general assistance shows up at an office, they are pretty much entitled to Medicaid coverage in the health plan.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair. So, thank you. So the governor's reduction, he was predicting a declining caseload and this stuff, but it wasn't as great, so we're having to put $9 million back to cover that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett, some of it is associated with new caseloads. Some of it is associated with rate changes. But they were all reductions made in the governor's budget. That's correct. And they are somewhat less in terms of the total reduction amount by about $9 million general fund. Line four, as I said, is a repricing of the implementation of the Medicare modernization. This is one of the packages, number 110. We'll get to another repricing of the policy option package 111, which is also associated with the Medicare Modernization Act, that offsets just about all of this increase. It's about, as I recall, $3.8 million on line 26. So just about all of this increase is offset by a decrease associated with caseloads in the Medicare Modernization Act. Line 5 is the addition of physician care organizations. During the last session, in, I believe, House Bill 3624, we added the option of using physician care organizations. And these are organizations that provide administrative oversight of a group of patients, and this is the cost of that, of adding that particular program, about $228,000 general fund, primarily because of what is known as a claims lag, or the elimination of a claims lag. We pay these organizations on a prospective basis. We pay fee-for-service expenditures on a retrospective basis after the fact. So this cost is associated with that claims or lack of claims lag. Line 6 is a net increase in what are known as non-OHP costs. Non-OHP includes in this budget, in the 05-07 budget, the clawback payment for the Medicare Modernization Act. It also, though, has traditionally and still does include the cost of purchasing Medicare coverage for people who are also Medicaid eligible. And this is the cost associated with that. It has increased over the governor's budget because of new information that we've received that these Medicare premiums are going up rapidly. In addition, in line 6, there is some match rate change for the better that offsets some of this higher cost for the Medicare premiums. So this, is, again, is a net number of several adjustments.
Representative Henson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the federal portion of line 6. Is that correct that that's a 10-to-1 federal match?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, it's not a 10-to-1 match rate. Again, this is the net of some match rate improvement for this particular program. So you're seeing additional federal funds and a lowering of the general fund required for this program, but it is a Medicaid match rate overall. And you're also seeing the impact of paying for higher premium costs in Medicare.
Okay,
but it distorts the match rate. That's what I'm getting at. Or it distorts the appearance of a match rate. Let's put it that way. On line 7, in the governor's budget, there was the closure of the Oregon State Hospital Jarrow wards, and there was a mistake in terms of the positions and FTE. There was the addition of 100 FTE rather than the reduction of 100 FTE. That was a wrong adjustment. And likewise, the FTE. What the agency is proposing here is to not close the Oregon State Hospital Jarrow Psychiatric Ward. You'll see in a moment that they have substituted two other cuts to the mental health system totaling $3 million, but after rethinking this reduction, they have decided that this is not a good way to go. As I understand it, the cost of doing this to the seniors and people with disabilities cluster would be about $3.1 million general fund, and that was not in the governor's budget. So these wards, according to this proposal, would remain open. We're reversing the addition of 100 positions as well as the FTE over on the far right on the spreadsheet. Line 8 is a new forecast since the governor's budget was published of the criminally committed Oregon State Hospital caseload. It would add about $2.8 million of general fund. Line 9 is other funds expenditure limitation needed for a Northwest Health Foundation grant, about $179,000 of other funds expenditure limitation. Line 10 is an adjustment to the non-limited federal funds. The department is estimating that it will spend more for the Women's, Infants, and Children program. These are all federal funds. We've included them in a non-limited basis, but we include this on our spreadsheet to show the best estimate that we have for this particular program's expenditures. But as the heading says, these are non-limited. Line 11 is the elimination of the Federal Health Services Block Grant. This is a public health grant in the president's budget. They are saying that they would need about $959,000 of general fund to backfill the loss of these federal funds. You'll see in a list of adjustments down below that we are reversing this addition. The Congressional House has made some indication that they would like to add this back, but in any case, we typically don't make changes when we get a president's budget because it is not final while we're working our budget. So we're saying down below that this is premature to be backfilling the loss of these funds when we don't know that we're going to lose them yet. Line 12 is the add back of the Family Planning Expansion Program, FPEP. This was a reduction in the governor's budget of $1.6 million. And this one does have a very favorable federal match rate of 9-1. And the agency is proposing to add this particular reduction back in its reshoot. On line 13, again in the governor's budget, there was a reduction of some general fund and positions, three positions, two FTE associated with public health drinking water program. What the agency is proposing here is to use services, available services and supplies funding to fund these positions. They believe this is an extremely important program and are requesting the addition of these three positions or get those back into the budget as well as two FTE associated with those positions. Line 14 is to transfer to public health the housing opportunities for people living with AIDS, HOPWA grant, from the Department of Housing to the Department of Human Services. And I checked with Monica Brown, the analyst for the Department of Housing, and she assured me that the requested federal limitation as well as the positions and FTE have been removed from the Housing and Community Services Department budget. So this is simply transferring that program from housing to the Department of Human Services. Line 15 is a position correction for the Oregon State Hospital investment package approved by the November 2004 Emergency Board. At that time, the Emergency Board gave its approval to invest some money in the Oregon State Hospital to study the program and also to establish more community-based care. facilities and placements around the state, and the positions associated with that e-board approval were left out of the governor's budget. Four positions, 3.5 FTE, and the agency is requesting that they be added to the budget so that that work can continue. Line 16 is to continue funding for community-based placements for adolescents in need of specialized mental health treatment. You'll see in a second that this cost of $3.1 million, $5 million federal funds, the general fund portion of this is offset through the closure, and this has already happened, of the ward for adolescents and children at the Oregon State Hospital. So although there are savings down below, we are investing more into the community for placements for those children. Line 17 is a request for increased staffing for the Office of Investigation and Training to implement the governor's panel's recommendation. I believe it was last fall that the governor called for a hard look and review of the investigation practices of abuse at Oregon State Hospital. That review was conducted by the department and reviewed by an outside panel, and they made recommendations to add staff to the Office of Investigation and Training to make sure that cases of reported abuse at Oregon State Hospital are investigated fully. This is a request for general fund, some federal limitation, four positions, 3.12 FTE. Line 18 is a request for an increase in limited duration positions for approved grant activities. These are within the public health program area. 10 positions, 9.5 FTE, that were not in the governor's budget. These, as you know, limited duration positions are eliminated at the end of the biennium, and this is a request to continue those that are being used to support grants, grant activities, federal grant activities. Line 19 is to adjust policy option package 108 for increased lottery revenue for gambling addiction. You pointed out the lottery amount in the governor's recommended budget is 7.8 based on a forecast, the May forecast. That has gone up. It hasn't gone up quite as much as this $1.5 million would indicate. And I will be recommending a small adjustment, I think about $27,000, to line the expenditure limitation for lottery funds in this budget up with the forecast in gambling addiction.
Thank you.
Line 20 are some Oregon Health Plan savings. The capitation rate has been updated since the governor's budget, fee-for-service rate updates. Client-related adjustment increases have been all recalculated. You'll see on line 21 on the next page, page 2, Oregon Health Plan caseload forecasts, reduced caseloads. There were reduced caseloads, as I recall, in the Temporary Assistance for Needy Family Program, some increases in the old age assistance caseload within the Oregon Health Plan. The net caseloads savings is $13.8 million general fund. Line 22 is a forecast of the General Fund HIV and Transplant Program. This was a program that was adopted to replace the Medically Needy Program, and that caseload is projected to be significantly lower, $3.9 million general fund. I will say that we are scheduling a meeting to talk about the AIDS Drug Assistance Program for leadership of both the Senate and the House on Friday. We'll be looking at that very carefully, but this was included in the reshoot. Line 23 is a revision of Medicaid and Children's Health Insurance Program match rates. It produced some savings, about $5.3 million of general fund. Line 24, increased third-party recovery revenues are up. We can use those to offset general fund, and that's what the department is proposing on line 24. Oregon Health Plan, mental health, the portion of the mental health of the Oregon Health Plan, kids intensive services are projected to have some lower costs, saving about $462,000 general fund. As I noted earlier, we are proposing the department is proposing to adjust policy option package 111, the Medicare Modernization Act, and it assumes passage of Senate Bill 88. And we will need to be working on that in the days to come very soon. This saves about $3.8 million, offsetting most of that $4 million general fund increase back up above. Line 27 is a correction of Children's Health Insurance Program costs. There was some duplication of cost in the governor's budget. This removes that. It's about $2.2 million general fund savings. As noted above, the savings from closing the Oregon State Hospital Adolescent Ward, $3.1 million general funds, is being reinvested in the community, as I noted above. Line 29 is the new forecast of the civilly committed Oregon State Hospital caseload, a savings of general fund of about $1.2 million. Up above, we saw the revision to the Medicaid and Children's Health Insurance match rates for the Oregon Health Plan. This is the Medicaid match rate change associated with the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services, $138,000 general fund. Line 31 acknowledges a reduction in some federal funding. Federal Centers for Disease Control revenue will be down by about $1.2 million. Therefore, we need less federal expenditure limitation, $1.2 million less federal limitation. Line 32 is a replacement for the reduction in that was gained in general fund from eliminating the JARA ward or closing the JARA ward at the Oregon State Hospital. As I said earlier, that ward will not be closed under this proposal, but these are further cuts to community mental health, half of it in adult outpatient services affecting about 1,750 people. And you'll see that that portion, the $1.5 million for that, will be added back down below. The other half, $1.5 million, is a cut to what is known as the Intermediate Care Payment Fund, which are payments to primarily hospitals for caring for people who are potentially will be civilly committed or perhaps criminally committed. And these are payments to hospitals for housing people who are in those particular psychiatric wards. It's the department's hope, and they have been working on this already, that we will have lower costs in these particular areas because mental health organizations and counties will be working to make sure that we have fewer people who go into the psychiatric wards of local hospitals. And they've been undertaking that work. So the second the second reduction of $1.5 million is perhaps less onerous, but still requires the department to do some significant work in the building up of the community mental health system. Line 33 is a correction of positions and FTE. In the governor's budget, there was the proposal to close the one ward at Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center. In this instance, however, the analyst inadvertently added 40 positions as opposed to reducing those positions.
Oops.
And reduced the FTE by 20, or increased the FTE by 26. So these, this position correction reduces the FTE ultimately by 13, but the positions are retained because even though there's a proposal here to close the ward, if a position is open for one day in the new biennium, it counts as a position. So the reduction is to the FTE, and we will actually be not closing that ward according to the House budget. You'll see that change in a moment. But this is a position correction to correct what was done in the governor's budget. Line 34 is to remove excess other funds expenditure limitation in the Oregon Health Plan. After looking at all of the caseload changes, the cost per case changes, and so on, and its other funds revenue, the department is saying that they have too much other funds limitation, and they're trying to true that down to the appropriate amount. Line 35 is to match up what is the current projection of provider tax revenue and federal funds match to the Oregon Health Plan standard program. It now appears that compared to the governor's budget, provider tax revenue going into OHP standard will be about $9.6 million less, and you can see that adjustment to the limitation for other funds as well as federal fund match, $17.3 million. Finally, on line 36 are a variety of technical adjustments, DHS-wide nets to zero general fund cost. This is the health services, these are the health services technical adjustments, and they total a reduction in general fund of $822,709. That leads us to the total reshoot adjustments. As I noted earlier, $25.9 million general fund, and gets us to the total reshoot request on line 38. Okay. Moving ahead then, we have a number of House budget adjustments. First of all, on lines 39 and 40, the public employee retirement system rate reductions, attorney general hourly rate reductions on line 40. Then we get to the House budget. An LFO reshoot, no general fund to replace the Federal Health Services block grant. We talked about this earlier. This reverses line 11 in the reshoot. Line 42 is the cost within the Oregon Health Plan for a seniors and people with disabilities reduction, the relative adult foster care. This provides funding for, because there will be a complete add back of the senior and people with disabilities reduction, and you'll see that in tomorrow's budget, but this is the Oregon Health Plan cost of that add back. On line 43, page 3, this is an add back to defer aggressive preferred drug list management of Oregon Health Plan fee for service prescription drugs. This was a reduction in the governor's budget, and that reduction is being reversed. It is a repriced reduction. It was about $5.1 million in the governor's budget. The cost of that reduction, or that reduction increased by about $100,000, and you can see that's why we are adding $5.2 million general fund. You can see other funds limitation. These are primarily, I would expect, to be drug rebates as well as federal match under the federal limitation column.
Okay, Representative Henson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is there a rationalization for why we're not doing the aggressive drug pricing management?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, I don't have a good rationalization for it. I think this would require a change in statute, and my guess is that leadership believed that it was not going to be possible to get that change in statute across both chamber floors.
Okay. Number
44. On line 44, add back Oregon Health Plan Dental. This would add back a little bit more than the emergency dental. The cost of that is about $5.2 million general fund. The proposal here is a $7 million general fund add back. This has not been priced actuarially. That is, we're not sure what benefits we would be buying back with the $7 million, but we know that we would be buying back at least the emergency dental and then some. So that actuarial work needs to take place if this is ultimately where the DHS budget lands at the end of session.
Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen.
Hannah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, we've had a number of discussions on this, and it was still the impression of this member that we began this process. The governor's recommended budget for this item was the 12.2. At one point during the process, we had a House and Senate co-chairs budget that showed 5.1 in this funding category. We then had what a number of members thought was a $7 million add back, and myself included felt that we were then at the 12.1, which was very close to the original request that had been in the agency request. And now we're finding that we are at 7, that the 7 wasn't an add back. It was, we're adding 7, not 5.1. And I just want to put it on the record. I still think this was I still think the original intent was there was 5.1 there, and we were adding 7 back to get it to 12.1. I know there's disagreement about that. As time goes on and there are adjustments made to the final days of these budgets, I would just hope that in your position you'd give that consideration.
I've already talked with Representative Scott and LFO about it, and we're not sure where the Senate is on this issue, but it'll be discussed between now and the final.
Thank you.
Representative Boone.
And I would second that and add that in the House Health and Human Services Committee, when we heard some of these, a lot of the testimony that was coming forward was this was a true picture of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, because the way it's handled right now is if someone, instead of just getting preventive dental work, they wait till they have a bad situation and then they end up in the emergency department, which costs quite a bit more in the long run. So.
Representative Hansen.
I won't be redundant and second everything that's been said.
You can third it.
But I could. The critical thing, though, I don't understand with the $7 million add back. If we fund just emergency, that's pretty easy to define. Emergency plus a little extra, it seems to me that would be very difficult to administer and very difficult to work out the details. So I'm an advocate for the full 12, but I'm thinking even going from 5 to 7 creates some difficulties that I don't know whether this is something that you can buy back in increments.
Okay. We've made a request, by the way, to from those that provide the services to give us a breakdown of what you can buy.
Oh, okay.
So that we can see.
That makes sense.
Now, when you're dealing with such a huge budget, it seems almost incredible to a lot of people that, you know, $5 million for something that's as important as this could be so difficult to come up with when we have so much going elsewhere. But each, you know, wherever we get money, it's got to come from somewhere. And so it's something that's seriously being looked at because we know the consequences can be great. Reliance on the emergency room, and also has secondary consequences of if adults don't have dental care, then even if we do have children with dental care, they don't get the preventive care because their parents aren't going. And so I mean, there's a lot of different aspects to it in addition to just the attendance at the emergency room.
And we have to add this too. You brought up a good point. In our committee, we heard quite a bit of this, and we even had a day's tour of an emergency dental clinic here in Salem. It was a pediatric tour, and there would be the kids who were in the Head Start group that were there, or whatever it was. I think what happened is they opened it up for that day. Their parents were there too, and they could see, oh my gosh, we've got a family situation here, not just one or two kids. And you're absolutely right. When they'll come into, say, a center and do cleaning or exams, or, you know, in that sense, or basically it's hygienist, they see that the family needs it too, and that, you know, it just expands. You see, oh, it's not just one here. We have five or whatever we need. So,
okay, so noted.
Continue on line 45 is to reduce the portion within the managed care organization capitation rates for funding for the DRG hospitals, diagnostic-related grouping hospital component, down to 72% of the actuarial rate. In the governor's budget, that had been increased from its current level, which is 72%, up to 90%. The proposal here is to keep that portion of the managed care capitation rate at 72%.
Which is the present rate?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it is the present rate. So the savings there are significant, $32.3 million general fund to this budget. Line 46 is to remove some roll-up that was included in the Oregon State Hospital Investment Package approved by the November 2004 Emergency Board. The roll-up for the 2005-07 biennium was estimated at $1.7 million general fund. I think by the time the governor's budget was put together, the addition was actually $4.7 million general fund, and this difference of $3 million is that difference between what was identified as a roll-up cost for the Oregon State Hospital investments and what was included in the governor's budget. The next six lines are add-backs of reductions that were made in the governor's budget to community mental health funding on line 47, community mental health crisis funding, line 48, mental health services for seniors and people with disabilities on line 49. As I noted earlier, there was the closure of one ward at the Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center. This is to add that cost back to not close the ward at Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center. Line 51 is mislabeled. It should be add back. You can strike the and enhance. This is simply the add back. And likewise, on line 52, the add back of several A&D workforce prevention funds on line 51 and alcohol and drug treatment enhancement projects on line 52. The next four lines are adjustments that are necessary to do a couple of things. The first major objective of these four lines is to raise funding for the tobacco prevention and education programs to its current level, its 2003-05 level of $6.9 million tobacco tax. And in order to do that, we are, well, let me back up. In the governor's budget, there is a transfer from tobacco use and reduction funds to the Oregon Health Plan. And in the governor's budget, it's about $9.9 million. And what we are doing here is we are, first of all, taking out all of the general fund, and there is a little bit of general fund in the tobacco prevention and education programs, replacing it with tobacco tax so that all that remains in the tobacco prevention and education programs is tobacco tax. And we are backfilling with general fund the net loss of tobacco tax to the Oregon Health Plan. So the overall, when you total or net these four lines, this shows an add of $1.7 million general fund to the Oregon Health Plan. And it funds the tobacco prevention and education program at $6.9 million, which is where it is today. The transfer of tobacco tax to the Oregon Health Plan will be about $7.5 million rather than the $9.9 million that was included in the governor's budget. So this does a number of things. You will see the transfer in a separate bill, and that's another bill that we will need to be working on.
Mr. Chair.
Mercy, wasn't it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Britton, can just sort of summarize for me, so because we're getting a lot of constituents. The House budget restores 6.9, or results in 6.9 million staying in the tobacco prevention programs.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett, that's correct.
So we
and
didn't.
That's its current. That's its level of funding in the current biennium, 03-05.
So we funding is follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So the current level of funding for that program is the same. It's just we're taking money from different places.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
There will still be, though, a transfer from the tobacco use reduction account to the Oregon Health Plan of $7.5 million. And we will see that, as I said, in another bill. But this maintains the level of funding that is where we are right now in the current biennium. We'll have to get a bill and do it. Yes. So that's another, like Senate Bill 88. We have some more work to do. Line 57 is the House 3% reduction to services and supplies and capital outlays, $1.2 million general fund. Line 58 is to add the durable medical equipment fee for service, cost of living adjustment back. It's about $965 million general fund, and this has been repriced based on new caseload projections. Line 59 is some other funds, excess other funds and federal funds limitation that I identified in this budget, and we're removing that on line 59. Line 60 is the LFO reshoot adjustment to the additional lottery funds so that we, at the bottom, match the May 2005 forecast of gambling addiction lottery funds going into the Department of Human Services. Line 61 is a proposed reduction to funding for abortions based on a reduced caseload estimate. Line 62 is an add back for the Oregon Health Plan cost for the waiver cap reduction in the senior and people with disabilities budget, and you'll see again the cost of that coming back, or the add back for that program in the seniors portion of the budget. This again is the Oregon Health Plan cost for that add back. Last page of the spreadsheet, line 63 is to add emergency ambulance fee-for-service cost of living adjustment, about $166,000 general fund and associated federal match. And finally, as I noted above, the add-back of that first substitute cut, $1.5 million for community mental health
to non-Medicaid eligible persons. This restores services to about 1,750 people. Subtotal of other recommended adjustments is on line 65, a further reduction of $12.9 million general fund, $33.3 million total funds. So line 66 is the total preliminary budget. We're not anticipating additional changes at this point, but there could be changes either in a end of session budget bill. But that's where we are. That's where we stand today, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay. Question on the presentation thus far. Going to performance measures.
The changes to the for you to consider on performance measures, I have listed on the back of your of the memo that I distributed today and gave you yesterday. Performance measurement 16 is the first to be looked at here. The current performance measure is the percentage of pregnancies that were unintended or were terminated. There was some discussion, I believe, about changing this measure to the rate of intended pregnancies per 1,000 women aged 15 through 44. And I believe the department sent you a letter, Mr. Chair, on that issue. But it's for your consideration this morning.
Why don't we talk about that just for a minute? During our hearings, there was discussion about the current wording, which says unintended or terminated, because now we're talking about a factor that is abortion, and so how do you calculate the separation? What's the number? And so then from that discussion, there was kind of a modification to the rate of unintended pregnancies per 1,000 women, but now that only is, that's kind of difficult to deal with as well. So now the suggestion is maybe we just flip the whole thing around and deal with a percentage of intended pregnancies. And we can actually get input from the agency on that, or we can just discuss it and see, how do you feel about it? The current recommendation is that the measurement be changed to track intended pregnancies. Is that better than unintended pregnancies? Is that all right? Anybody have any feelings about it? Either way, should we let them make
I guess
that?
I'm, excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Booth.
I guess I need more clarification on what that means, how that.
Okay, you know what? Maybe we ought to get an explanation.
You have somebody up here. Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks.
Let's talk about pregnancy.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Barry Kass, the Deputy Director, Interim of the Department of Human Services. And indeed, we were here several months ago confronting the same issue. We were responsive to your concerns expressed during our hearings that the way in which this measure was framed and the underlying calculations that were made to achieve that number raised the implication or a confusion in the minds of the committee that there was a relationship between family planning and the termination of pregnancy, which was unwarranted in our view. So we tried to be responsive to your concerns about the measure. I brought forward a proposal from the staff in the Office of Family Health in a letter to you of May 10th. I did not bring additional copies of that today. I regret that in retrospect. Essentially, the performance measure that is there now is based on the counting both intended pregnancies and a fraction, a percentage calculated of terminated pregnancies. Pregnancies are terminated apparently for a variety of reasons. And the intent was to measure Oregonians' access to and use of services to attain their childbearing goals, including contraception.
Yeah, before and, we go further, I think you said intended pregnancies.
Yes.
Did you mean unintended?
Unintended pregnancies. And to monitor maternal and child health with the understanding that intendedness is correlated strongly in the research with protective factors that lead to improved outcomes for children. And the combination of data from the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Monitoring System, that's the PRAMS data, which is a survey that's done following delivery, tells us about intendedness, and termination of pregnancy data from health records, which tells us something about how many abortions there were, but it doesn't tell us the reason for those terminations, and that is the confounding problem. And I think you and Representative Hanna were quite clear in your concerns about the way in which the measure was formulated. We would propose turning this on its head and introducing modifications to the measure that would frame it positively, that is, the percentage of pregnancies that were intended, and that removes, I think, the confounding variable of interpreting the reasons for terminations of pregnancy. Our goal, and this is a public health measure, this is not a health services measure, our goal in that program is to help Oregonians make responsible decisions and planful decisions about their families. And we get information following delivery about the intendedness of pregnancies, and we can gather the data directly from the PRAM survey and report it to you. In 2002, based on that data, 60.8% of the births in Oregon were intended, and that gives us a little different perspective on the measure. So if that is I don't know if that's a solution to your concerns, but it is a way that we can bring forward performance. We can, I think, be accountable for the work we do in the family planning program in the Office of Family Health and remove the cloud that I think you perceived over this measure.
Okay, with you. I think that it's a two-pronged aspect. Okay, there's two aspects to this. One is, does it solve the concern? I think it does. The second is to focus on the purpose of the measure itself, and does it give you information that is going to help you determine something relating to child safety? I mean, I'm only one person, right? Got nine kids. Eight were our, well, we had seven births in our relationship, and not all of them were planned. And I've got eight kids that are married and are having kids. We have 18 grandchildren, thank you. And three on the way, always three on the way, every year. And I just got, that'll continue for a while. Father's Day, I got a call from one daughter who said, couldn't be there, but just want you to know that we're having another baby, which was wonderful. Another one had a baby 17 months ago and said, guess what? We're having a baby, although this one was a little early. And so if she got the survey, thinking back to just before you got pregnant, how did you feel about becoming pregnant? I think that there would be many women who would say, well, I wasn't planning on getting pregnant, but after it happened, for many, that's a very joyful thing after the shock goes away. And for others, it may not be so joyful, and the shock continues. And so I don't know if what you're aiming to accomplish with this measure will be accomplished by the answers that you get.
Chairman Richardson, we can't refine the data to the degree that we could make the kinds of distinctions that you're talking about. As Senator Winters pointed out in the earlier hearings, there's a huge difference between unwanted and unplanned pregnancies.
Right.
And that distinction is not captured in this data. But the research establishes the relationship between intendedness and birth outcomes and subsequent development. So I think the interpretation is that at least we have a measure that gives us some indication of whether the program effectively will be shaping those other outcomes, because I don't think we can get there with at that level of refinement between each pregnancy and each outcome. And we depend on that kind of efficacy research for all kinds of things, including pharmaceutical effectiveness. We don't have to measure the effectiveness of every prescription because we know that the research establishes the general efficacy of an individual pharmaceutical. And similarly, we know that if these numbers improve, we will have better outcomes. We should see reduced child welfare incidents and so forth. And it just depends on whether we get there. If there is another way to do this, we would be responsive to it. We don't have it now.
I think you kind of hit the crux of what I'm getting at, and that is the comment by Senator Winters, is does this give you a measurement of an unwanted as compared to an unintended pregnancy? Because that, I think, would be more indicative of, you know, the connection between safety issues.
This is not an area of expertise for me. I'm a clinical social worker, but we could take this issue back and continue to work on it with the epidemiologists in our Office of Family Health and see if we can't refine this more. What we've proposed would only address the issue that was raised in the earlier hearings.
And Mr. Chair,
and I just wanted to say this is so timely. I'm beginning to think I'm a little psychic. I don't know. It's scary. Yesterday and the day before, I've been working on some stuff to do in the interim, and this is one of them. And if I were in the position of going for a thesis, this is perfect. Somebody needs to do this. And I have to say I like it, and I like the idea, and I think it needs to be fleshed out a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Not quite yet.
Mr. Chair and members, one alternative you might consider is to send or ask the department to work on this particular measure and present it to the audit committee during the interim for review. That's a thought.
Mm-hmm. Other thoughts on it?
Well,
Representative Hanna, then Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, you know, we had considerable discussions about this, and I think Mr. Cast has his arms around this from the standpoint that I personally didn't think it was perfect then. I don't think the solution is perfect, but you put good work to it, and the idea that there's a way to get a number on unintended versus unwanted, and I'm not, you know, I like doing statistics and whatnot, but that's a tough one because, as you say, may have been unintended, but becomes then joyous and wanted, and it's hard to measure emotion in this. And the difficulty when we first started, I think if I had my choice, I'd take the second measurement over the first measurement because that one seemed backwards. I mean, to me, this one at least seems to be going from the more positive direction. So thanks for the work. I know we're still, we might have a little bit to go here to get it defined, but I think we're moving in the right direction.
You're welcome. Okay, Representative Hanson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. On any of the performance measures, I'm not terribly hung up on the wording that goes into it as much as are we consistently measuring the same thing over a period of years? We're all going to editorialize, and we can look at the same sets of numbers, and we can use them for different purposes and stuff. And we may think about them in different ways. And each one of our interpretations of what we're measuring and how we're measuring and what that shows us and what piece of knowledge is going to differ. But the critical thing is to keep measuring the consistency of the numbers and what we do. This particular change that was proposed, I don't think it changes the data collection in any way. So I don't think it hurts. But the critical thing is to keep measuring the same thing so we get the long term raw data that we can use maybe in a lot of different ways and for a lot of different purposes.
Correctly, wasn't it?
I guess I'll give an opinion. I wasn't part of the committee when we went through phase one and phase two. If I'm the agency and I'm looking at ways to measure me or see if I'm using the taxpayers' money effectively, I think Measure 17 is the one that's effective, and that's, you know, whether it was intended or not intended, if you're going to be a good parent, you're going to start getting care and help. And as far as an agency, that's what I would be wanting to be sure that the people that are pregnant are going to get parenting classes and things like that. So as an agency, that's what I would want to ask you to be sure you're doing, and that's going to help you plan your resources and your needs to families.
Here's what I would suggest, and that is that we would go ahead and accept the agency's recommendation on the change in wording, and that we ask that the agency consider the wording that you get on your survey, that it include alternatives such as surprised or, you know, I don't mean this literally, but unintended, but followed with a positive pregnancy, or unintended and cause depression. I mean, some way that you could determine the unintended versus the wanted. But, you know, leave that to you and your expertise to come up with, trying to come up with a way to distinguish between those.
Mr. Chairman, I will take your advice back to the epidemiologists, and I think the concern they would have is that if we add additional items, that's one thing. If we change the way in which the survey is conducted, that may change the validity of the data, but I don't know the answer to that, and we will give you back a response. I don't see any reason why we couldn't do that, but I'd have to ask them.
Thank you very much.
It's good discussion. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we'll put something in the budget report to accept the DHS proposal as outlined in the letter to you. Is that right?
That's correct,
Mr. Chair.
That's correct.
Okay, and to continue to work on that.
All right. I'm trying to I want to make sure that we get through everything we need to get through, and so I'm going to start kind of moving things ahead and down. Let's go to 17.
Performance measurement 17, I raised the issue of considering increasing the targets for 2006 and 2007 because the 2002 actual data exceeds the targets for 06 and 07.
Okay, can I say this? Is this correct that in 17, 18, 20B, 21, and 22, in each of these you have recommended changes in the targets so that there is something for them to shoot for, because in many instances they may have already achieved more than what the target was?
Yes.
Okay, is there any discussion? I mean, we could go compare all those numbers, but if we know what you've done, then that might be sufficient.
I think that's good.
Okay. I would note online on number 18, I have not suggested targets. The 2003 data exceeds the 2003 target, but it does not exceed 2006 and 2007. So we could leave those alone or whatever you wish.
Well, I think that I would go along with your recommendations here, because you've looked at this and we trust your analysis.
Do you want to ask the agency for any comments on any of these targets?
If the agency has any serious problems, they can step forward. It's too slow on the gavel. We're not objecting. Okay, moving
Mr.
ahead.
Chairman, I'll be brief. Barry Cast again. We do not have objections to the changes that have been proposed by staff, by Mr. Britton, with one caveat, and that is that the Tobacco Prevention and Education Program was funded at a substantially higher rate in the late 90s and early part of this decade.
You're referring to which number?
The tobacco 20B is measures youth tobacco use, which is a survey-produced number.
Got it.
And then there is the number of packs sold per capita, and that is an interesting item because of the impact of Internet sales and the debate about that. And that's going to be changing because the credit card companies are cooperating with the state attorney generals and the federal government to cease assisting in Internet sales. And that may change both the tobacco use reduction account and the number of packs sold that we see in the marketplace. But the point I was trying to make, and just for the record, essentially is that the effect of a prevention program is longitudinal. It extends into the future. And we have seen there's a continuing reduction in the use of tobacco in Oregon from these data, but it's not as fast as it was before. And so the caveat is that there is a relationship between prevention efforts and these outcomes.
In your
presentation, we've been successful to now, and it will depend on how far we can go.
If you can make a note that when you come to this committee in 2 years, and I would suggest after that, and we're going to deal with performance measures, that you have the information on funding over time so that there can be that can be compared, and not knowing what the outcome is going to be, but at least we won't be looking at mere conclusory data when we've changed one of the factors that may have an influence on that, such as funding.
We will do that.
So with that caveat, you're okay with these? All right, great. Thank you.
All right. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll continue. We have not received budget notes from the House chairs proposed for this particular budget area.
Okay. Now, I have brought one with me today that we will probably be considering as a committee maybe tomorrow because it kind of come up at the last minute. We want to just check it out. But with that caveat, we will not have no budget notes to deal with today.
You can see that the subcommittee action is that we recommend the subcommittee approve a preliminary budget. The numbers in here are the ones that were at the bottom line of the spreadsheet. You can do that.
Okay.
And secondly, I've phrased this probably wrongly, but it's to recommend that the subcommittee voice its approval of two amendments related to DHS health services that are expected to be made. One involves the addition of $1 of other funds expenditure limitation to the capital construction bill, Senate Bill 5504, for the Oregon State Hospital, Oregon State OSH project. This expenditure limitation could be increased by the emergency board if the project is to proceed. And the second is a companion bill. This relates to adding $2 million in the Certificates of Participation Authorization Bill, SB 5503, which would set the stage for an emergency board appearance to consider approving issuance of COPs to begin the OSH project. As far as I know, this subcommittee may not be hearing these Senate bills, but other budget subcommittees will be. But you need to be aware that these are two probable amendments that will be made in these two different bills. Both require emergency board approval to continue the process.
Okay, Chair would consider individual motions on these two items from someone who has a stout heart and a good memory.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would make a motion to this committee that we accept LFO's recommended budget for the DHS health services area and approve a preliminary budget of $1,128,956,187 in general fund, $9,312,000 lottery funds, $814,660,874 other funds, $2,708,970,705 federal funds, and 2,230 positions.
Which includes
2,163.8
FTE. Representative Hanna recommends that for human services, the LFO recommendations in the preliminary budget set forth in the amounts that he has given to us, including the positions and FTE count. Are there any questions on the motion or discussion? Representative Hansen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's kind of difficult to say that you're going to oppose something because there's not enough money. When the maker of the motion almost stuttered when it got to the when he was trying to get the billion out, I'm going to. I'm still very concerned about the dental, and it's although certainly this budget has added back some very worthy things, and there's a lot of good things in this budget. There's still some things that didn't get in. One of the things is, as we're going through this and we talk about the various general fund savings, if we track over to the other column and we see the federal fund savings, which are usually 2-to-1 match, these aren't really savings. We're missing that much federal dollars that could be coming into the state to help us solve problems and serve Oregonians. And there's just particularly in the dental arena, I think we need to go on record that some of these things aren't adequate yet. And I hope that this will be a continuing process, and that there still can be some movement and some increases. And that, I would think, that's a very real possibility as some of the other major pieces of the budget we get closer to agreement between the House and the Senate. I would hope that might free up some dollars that could be used to enhance this. And every dollar that we enhance with general fund in this budget, we're picking up 2-to-1 match. And I think that's incredibly important. So, although this is a preliminary budget, I'm going to be a preliminary note.
Okay. Other discussion? Is there other objection? If not, then the motion to accept LFO's recommendation as set forth by Representative Hanna on this portion of the DHS budget is approved. Next motion.
Mr. Chair, on the second bullet, I'm not sure that you need a motion other than just to be aware that this is going on and to say that this is a good idea or not a good idea or whatever it is you want to.
It's a good idea.
Okay.
Next item.
All right.
Do we need a motion?
I think
it's a great idea.
Mr. Chair, that concludes the information that I have for 5148, the work session for this morning. We still need to work on 5149.
So. All right. And with that, we will close work session on House Bill 5148 and open work session on House Bill 5149. Don't be going anywhere.
Over.
Mr. Britton.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some things to hand out to you. 2 pages. Chair and members, if we're ready to proceed,
please.
Okay.
Let's continue.
I have handed out two things to you. The first is a copy of House Bill 5039. House Bill 5039 is the fee bill for the Department of Human Services that was submitted to the Joint Ways and Means Committee. And this will be the basis for changing House Bill 5149, which is the House Budget Committee bill of the same type. 5149, as you can see, is a blank bill, but it will be filled with House Bill 5039 in a conceptual or in a final amendment. There are two changes related to this bill that I want to make note of that, with your approval, would be incorporated in the amendments. First of all, the reason that we are doing this is that this is a Senate Bill 333 ratification process. These fees, with the exception of one, which I'll note and is the topic of one amendment, have all been administratively either established or increased during the current biennium. And the SB 333 ratification process requires that the legislature approve those increased fees. The changes to House Bill 5039 are two. One is, if you look on the back of that page on 5039, on the second page, line 4, the disinterment permit for $15 needs to come out. That apparently was not administratively established, so that will be removed in a subsequent amendment. And secondly, there will be an additional fee added that was administratively changed in May of this year, that added a fee of $10 for the alert immunization registry data, a record fee of $10 per fee. So that will be added pending your approval to the changes to House Bill 5149. So what we're going to do again, Mr. Chair, is to incorporate the changes to House Bill 5039, the alert immunization data fee, into House Bill 5149.
All right. I'd like to hear from the agency whoever can speak on this, as to whether or not these fees will be continuing throughout the remainder or throughout the next biennium, or is there any discussion about raising the fees again before the next biennium? I mean, before the next time our committee meets, which should be next session.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bill Coulomb, Manager of Program Operations and Public Health.
I don't have to spell your last name.
Coulombe.
Thank you.
The fees that have been administratively adopted by our programs in the current biennium would be those amounts that are expected to be set and would not be raised again, either in the current biennium or into the next biennium. Okay. The fee levels should be adequate with which to support the programs.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We have these already in place. We have the opportunity to ratify them. And we've had a representation from the agency, an assurance that these fees will continue through the 05-07 biennium without being raised again. There is one issue as far as the alert immunization registry data fee of $10 per record request that would also need to be approved. Is there discussion on that before we move forward? Question. Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unless I missed something, this is the first we've seen of this. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hannah, that's correct.
Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Representative Hannah.
Have you, at the co-chair's level, had an opportunity to discuss the type of fee increases we're looking at here?
No, we have not discussed them. The discussion would be essentially, do we go back and say that although you've been having these fees in place for months or a year or two, do we go back and challenge what they've already been doing and replace them with some other number? And that discussion, to my knowledge, has not occurred.
One more follow-up, please.
Certainly.
Do we have any fee history schedule? I mean, do we know when the last time these fees were raised?
We do not have that data here.
We can get it for you.
If you want that.
Well, one more follow-up, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. I mean, we just got it. But, I mean, I'm just kind of flipping through here. We're talking about a 33%, a 25%, a 17%, and I haven't done all the math. But these are, if I'm doing the math right, fairly significant fee increases.
Okay, we can have...
Could we hear about that?
Mr. Bloom, would you please come back and discuss with us the justification for raising these fees during the current session?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Hanna, the fee schedule that pertains to the Center for Health Statistics, all of those fees that are scheduled under vital records, were last increased in 1991. So they have not had a fee increase in over 15 years. The alert fee for the $10 per record is a new fee. They have not been charging that in the past. The alert database, the registry, is primarily funded through voluntary donations. And this fee, which was enabled through House Bill 2244 from the last legislative session, was adopted in order to be able to assess a fee to simply recapture costs for those registry records that are necessary from healthcare professions that do not make a voluntary donation.
Follow, okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanna.
And I'm sorry, is it Colm, Mr.
Coulomb?
Coulomb.
Don't heat him, Coulomb.
Okay. on the back page, do you have the same document we have? What, under J, verification, prior fee level was non-existent, now we're $8. Verification of what?
I do have some information on that. Verification is a fee that Vital Records is attempting to recapture costs where they have to have staff simply research and obtain the certificate. Verification is only a fee that is assessed for governmental entities such as the Armed Services, PERS, police agencies. And this is usually just a verification to make sure that evidence exists of a certificate event. So, for example, with PERS, they may need to have verification that a divorce decree does exist in determining benefits. So the Vital Records would charge them simply $8 for the research rather than $20 of issuing them a copy of a divorce certificate. That's the intent of a verification fee.
What's the likelihood in the future that verification could take place over or electronically so that it wouldn't be necessary to burden you and have to look those things up at all, but that if these are public documents, why not have public access?
As we move into more advanced electronic capabilities within Vital Records, it will certainly improve our efficiencies. The access to the information as to whether or not it would be public record for anybody to be able to obtain electronically, I cannot answer that question. But I certainly would look into it.
In Jackson County, we now can go online and look up property records, locations, maps, deeds, you know, and it's wonderful to be able to do that instead of go stand in line and then to have somebody spend the time to look those things up. So I'm just wondering if there is a movement in your IT plan to provide online access for public documents, you know, such as marriage, divorce, those kinds of things can be looked up anywhere in the courthouse by anybody who wants that. So if it hasn't been discussed, would you consider that?
Mr. Chair, I will check with the state registrar as to what their long-term plan is around the technology. I know our most present initiatives are with which to be able to meet compliance of the Intelligence Reform Act, which will require electronic capabilities for both birth and death registry.
So would you get back with me on that then?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
A quick question. Are some of these, while you're still up here, Mr. Coulomb, some of the fees, are they just the results of some of the legislation that's been moving through some of the Judiciary Committee stuff? Do you know? Like, I was wondering, and I don't know, I'm just thinking maybe that on the marriage fees or the birth certificates, things like that, do those fee increases correlate to some other bill that's been raised for victims' assistance, something like that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
It's primarily driven
by their
primarily driven just by a cost of doing business and increased review.
14 or 15 years or so. Representative
Henson. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got no problems in terms of that we need to approve these fees. A little more global, and we're starting to get into this with the electronics. The way we've always paid for the whole of the vital records is through this collection of fees. And every once in a while you stumble into some situations like when my first wife passed away, and we had to get significant numbers of copies of her mother, who had a lot of financial commingled financial things with her daughter, had to get an incredible number of death certificates, and the requirements of some of them needed originals, some would accept a copy. I mean, it was just kind of bizarre. And you start thinking in terms of this day and age, with the ability to have electronic information, that an insurance company would require a certified clean copy of a death certificate it seemed pretty basic that they could have verified that information in a lot of other ways rather than sending this. Others would have you fax them, which sort of made it seem a little strange. Anyway, I guess I'm saying that traditionally this is the way we funded the whole vital statistics collection. And as we move into different kinds of technology, we probably need to have a new discussion in terms of is this the right way and the fair way to finance this activity? And at the same time, is it going to be a very antiquated way to finance it at some point that may not do the job? The other one that I think we need to start looking at, and this is based on all the Homeland Security stuff that's coming out, we're going to be passing some incredible costs on to some of our citizens for pretty basic stuff that most of us didn't have to worry about. But when you're starting to talk about $55 fingerprint charges, and then also having to produce another copy of maybe of your birth certificate, virtually every time you document that you're doing almost anything, this is going to be a real stiff cost to some of young people just starting out, and we need to be generally aware of it. That some of these fees we may be having to get birth certificates 3 and 4 times a year compared to 2 or 3 times in a lifetime.
In light of that, Mr. Coulomb, in your response, is it possible that either someone in your office or the registrar's office could determine what is being done elsewhere? Maybe you have associations, you know, or trade journals. I don't know how you can do this, but are there other states that have already invented the new wheel utilizing data and digital resource and access to vital records that preserves privacy, enables verification of authenticity, and still makes it available for people to obtain without having to wait for the mail or come in person and request these things?
Representative Chair, members of the committee, the State Registrar, as a matter of fact, was just at a national conference last week. I haven't had an opportunity to discuss with her all of the topics discussed, but I'm almost positive that in the event of fraud and prevention and such, that was very high on their priority list. So I definitely will ask her to get back to the committee.
Ways and Means, I'm sure, would be very interested in helping to promote that dialogue.
We appreciate
and see what can be done in Oregon. Thank you. Further discussion on this? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if the agency could respond. If you, like on the birth and death certificate piece, item B on our copy, the $15 fee, $340,425 generated, that's almost 23,000 people coming in the door, or it's 23,000 records that you've reproduced. In the case of, is there a way in the case of multiple copies being requested? I mean, I come from a family of seven. So if one of your parents dies and all seven of you have to have five copies, and now that's 35 copies, you have this expedite fee where you charge an extra 50 cents. What about a multiple copy? I mean, I'm just thinking of families who walk in the door and say, you know, we have to have 35 of these. Now it's 35 times the fee amount. What about a multiple copy fee for that situation? Do you have anything like that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, not that I'm aware of in the administrative rules that were adopted. Primarily, probably a significant portion of the requests that we get will be for a second copy of a certificate. It certainly is something that the program could entertain as far as amending their rules again to create like a sliding scale fee or, I guess for lack of a better term, a bulk rate.
Well, yeah, because it goes on where your focus is. If the focus is to raise money, then you certainly do it by having a flat fee. If it's really to pay for itself, then the cost of going and pulling the record is your main time consumer, not pushing the button for the duplication. And so it certainly would be cheaper to produce three than one because, I mean, it wouldn't be three times as expensive to produce three than one because of just the access costs and time. So those would be something that would be good for the citizens for us to look at. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Britton, again, to catch me up, so is this the fees cover the expenditure or the expense of this office? Is that the... And you know, the question follow-up to that would be, that, you know, how are they doing? Is they need this much? They have an ending balance? Have they been... And also, why would the administrative rules, why were they implemented right after the session or not? Let's see. Yeah, it'd be, is that normal that they wouldn't have come in during the session and asked since they hadn't been changed since 1991?
Mr. Chair, and with your permission, I'd refer those to the agency. I would respond, though, to say that these fees support what the budget that you preliminarily approved. I do not necessarily believe, but I would seek clarification from Bill as to whether they support the entire operations. I'm not sure of that. My guess is they do not, but I'm not positive of that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the vital records fees support all the operation of the vital statistics section. The vital statistics section receives no general fund support whatsoever. It is anticipated for the 0507 biennium that these fees will generate a ending balance that would equal to approximately 1 month's cash flow. And again, for into 0709, it is estimated that the fee will again hold the vital statistics section with this level of staffing at about the same level to the end of that biennium as well.
So that means that you actually went in the hole in the 0103 session before these new fees were implemented?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would have. However, the state registrar was very fiscally prudent and took extreme measures in making significant reductions. She basically forestalled all of her catch-up activities on prior records. She kept vacancies open as long as she could, and we barely etched into the black.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Barry Cass, I think I can shed some light on Representative Whitson's question. We brought these fee increases forward in the last legislative assembly, and because they hadn't been administratively authorized, we were asked by the chair to bring that back, move the fees in this process, and come back to this session, which is exactly what we've tried to do.
Okay.
Are there that other explains questions? Why the date corresponds to the end of the session.
If there are no other questions, we could accept a motion. Representative Hanson, we're going to we're going to bring into House Bill 5039 the alert, and then we're going to try to amend the whole thing into 5149?
Mr. Chair, what we're intending to do is to take House Bill 5149 and gut and stuff it with 5039 with those two exceptions that I mentioned, which were the eliminating the one on the verification on the back page of House Bill 5039 and adding the alert. So what we're really doing, or what your motion, if you want to go ahead, is to amend House Bill 5149 as recommended by LFO and recommend that it be approved or sent to the full committee as amended, do pass as amended. But this is the bill that we will be amending, House Bill 5149.
Okay.
With the changes that I just noted.
Okay, so the first first motion would be to amend. Chair, I move that we amend 5149 as recommended by LFO.
That would be a correct motion, yeah.
All right.
It's a good motion.
Representative Hansen moves that House Bill 5149 be amended as recommended by LFO, which, for the record, no, I don't think
that's
good enough, will include the contents of House Bill 5039 with the exception of the line relating to disinternment permits and a $15 fee, which will not be included in this amendment to 5149. And it will include an alert immunization registry data fee of $10.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Is there discussion? Is there objection?
Yeah. I'm very pleased to see the disinternment fee come out.
Well, you know, we've got to be
a lot of money over the years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I tried to cut in there on discussion first, but...
You're in the discussion.
Okay. Is there any chance to get an answer to the idea of multiple copy fees or any of that kind of thing before this is approved? I mean, that's...
No, because that would change a lot. Not that it can't be done in the future, but... Since these are already in place, and since we're at this stage in this whole process, Chair would think that we need to go ahead with this. But if anyone feels that they can't vote for it, we understand.
Okay.
But certainly we're going to get response from the agency, and I think that we're all in agreement that the idea of multiple copies and a discount for multiple copies is an appropriate thing to look at and will be followed up with. So... With that, is there anyone objects to the fees as they are presently?
I do.
All right, so any other objection? So it's noted that Representative Hannah objects to the motion, but since everyone else is in favor of it, it carries, and House Bill 5149, as amended, will now go forward to the full committee.
You need an emotion for that, too, please.
Okay, second motion. That we pass it as amended to full committee.
Mr. Chair, I would move 5149 be passed as amended to full committee with a due pass recommendation.
President Hansen moves that House Bill 5149 as amended be forwarded and go to the full budget committee as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on that? Is there objection to that?
I do.
Representative Hansen's Hannah's objection is so noted, and would ask Representative Hansen if he'd carry it to the full committee. And with that, the motion carries, and House Bill 5149 proceeds. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 5149. Is there any other matter that needs to be discussed for the committee before we adjourn?
Mr. Chair, just one thing. I will be distributing to your offices probably late this morning or early afternoon the materials, similar materials for the tomorrow's work session on the seniors and people with disabilities budget. So if you have questions, I will be around this afternoon, and if you'd like to talk to me, you certainly are welcome to.
What's your number?
986 18
1-6.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, so then that's tomorrow's Wednesday, right? Mm-hmm. So then Thursday we get...
Tomorrow's Thursday.
Oh, today is Wednesday.
At least been a day behind all.
So we will not... We come back next week to finish up the overall, or can we finish it up tomorrow too?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett, our intention is to give you conceptual amendments after we finish up with seniors tomorrow on the DHS budget and pass it, if you approve, on to the full committee
tomorrow
for the DHS budget. As noted in our discussion today, there are some additional bills that we need to be working on, and we will do that as we can. To complete the action on the DHS budget. There's a program change bill. There's some other Senate Bill 88 or related legislation that is critical to this budget.
Thank you.
Further questions? Hearing none, we stand adjourned.